True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
It wouldn't be 2020 without a wild weekend in baseball. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on a Monday, August 31st. Frank Stanfill here alongside Scott White. And Scott, we have trades. You're about to rip somebody off in Tout Wars. What is going on, man?
I don't know. That's an ethical question, right? Somebody offered me Xander Bogaerts for Ketel Marte. I just now noticed it because the site we play Tout Wars on isn't the greatest. I just now noticed it. It was offered to me on August 3rd. I think too much time has passed for me to make that move. I'm not totally sure I want to make that move, but I do need home runs. So that's hardly the most important thing from the weekend, though. Maybe we shouldn't get sidetracked on ethical questions of trade acceptance or not.
Yeah, I mean, come on. There are no ethics in fantasy baseball. There are no friends in fantasy baseball. You have a chance to take advantage. You do it, Scott. But today on the show, we will get to some of those trades that are actually happening in real life baseball, not in Scott's Tout Wars League, not in fantasy baseball. There is just a ton going on. We're going to recap a lot of the weekend, some waiver wire, most added, most dropped, and a few questions later on. Fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This edition of Oh My Goodness Gracious is brought to you by Sixto Sanchez and Corbin Burns.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Scott, I'm not even giving you the option. I'm not giving myself the option. It is time to talk about Sixto Sanchez and Corbin Burns. It feels like it was forever ago that they were awesome on Friday. And just now we're getting the opportunity to talk about these two guys. Sixto Sanchez, 7 shutout against the Tampa Bay Rays, 10 strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes on 92 pitches. Corbin Burns going up against the Pirates. Great matchup on Friday. 6 shutout, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts, 13 swinging strikes on 93 pitches. Scott, I moved Sixto Sanchez, I believe, inside my top 45 starting pitchers as a result of this performance.
Yeah, that's pretty easy to do, I think, because that's right around the point where the starting pitchers no longer matter. Sixto Sanchez looks like he matters, for sure. The biggest question coming up from the minors was how many bats would he miss? Because the stuff rated off the charts, and yet he was... The strikeout rate was unimpressive in the minors, considering. It wasn't terrible, but it was not what you'd expect for a pitcher whose stuff is rated so highly. But man, he 18 whiffs on those 92 pitches, 10 strikeouts. He had, among those 18 whiffs for Sixto Sanchez on Friday, 8 on the changeup, 4 on the fastball, 3 on the sinker, 2 on the slider, 1 even on the curveball. Assuming he actually has all those pitches. That's how it broke down on StatCast, anyway, on Baseball Savant. So, he looked awesome. He throws 100 miles per hour. He's a good ground ball guy. I see no reason why you wouldn't be totally head over heels for him at this point and planning on starting him most of the time.
Yeah, and he did it against a pretty good Rays lineup. It's like a misfit Rays lineup, but they always find a way to piece things together. And so far this season, they are top 10 in WOBA, weighted on base average, against right-handed pitching. So it's not like Sixto Sanchez did it against I don't know, his own lineup against the Marlins. He actually did it against a pretty good lineup. You mentioned it throws around 100 miles per hour, has a couple of different pitches that he can mess with. Really good command. Only one walk in this start, gets a ton of ground balls. Sixto Sanchez, look, I just hope that he can, you know, carry over and keep this type of performance up. He's going up against the Tampa Bay Rays again this week. I think you leave him in your lineup. And then Corbin Burnes is the other one. He's been inconsistent this season, and I realize that. But he is going to be a stud, Scott. I truly believe that. We said it before the season. I'm sticking by Corbin Burnes. He throws mid-90s with the fastball. He has this cutter that's like 93, 94 miles per hour. He has a sweeping slider, a changeup that he can use to get left-handed pitchers out. 68% rostered Corbin Burnes, 64% for Sixto Sanchez. I don't know if there's just some leagues that have kind of given up to this point, but those need to be, I think, close to 100%.
Yeah, Corbin Burnes has been stuck below 70 for a while now, and it kind of baffles me because he has been inconsistent in terms of innings. You know, he moved from the rotation to the bullpen back to the rotation. The walks have been kind of high. But everything else, like run prevention, it's been great. He's at 12.8 K per nine, 14.4% swinging strike rate. I mean, those are top of the charts type of numbers for Corbin Burnes. And now that he's able to go six innings, I believe doing so in back-to-back starts. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why you wouldn't be excited about him either. He's relief pitcher eligible, but now starting pitcher eligible too. If that's more of the need in your particular lineup, just a really exciting pitcher. I'm not even that concerned about the walks because it hasn't been like you look at his minor league track record. You look at last year in the bullpen. It's not a great walk rate, but it's not terrible. It's not like we were looking at what Josh James did last year. You know, so I don't even think you look at that 4.7 walks per nine innings for Corbin Burnes and think, okay, that's just who he is. He's probably even better. He's probably better than that with the walks, which would make him, you know, even better overall.
Corbin Burnes is at the Cleveland Indians this week, which is a good matchup. If you can find a way to do it, I think you get both Burnes and Sixto Sanchez in your lineups this week, especially with Burnes' SPARP eligibility. Scott, we have trades, a.k.a. this is the AJ Preller hour because the Padres GM is wheeling and dealing. We also have a lot of players to be named later that are on the move. So let's get things started here on, did this happen Friday or Saturday? All the days just kind of blend together at this point, Scott. The Royals traded for Trevor Rosenthal. The Royals traded away Trevor Rosenthal to the San Diego Padres for outfielder Edwin Olivares and a player to be named later. Scott, who's going to close in San Diego?
I think it's going to be Rosenthal. I think so. Drew Pomeranz happened to come off the IL the same day. He worked the eighth inning for the Padres. Emilio Pagan, he's struggled all year. He had been closing after they lost Pomeranz, who took over, of course, after they lost Kirby Yates. Pomeranz is the lefty. They have Pagan, a righty, and now they have a second righty in Rosenthal. My guess is it's Rosenthal. It may be a situation where it depends on, you know, whether lefties are due up in the ninth, whether righties are, as to how the Padres employ those two. But I would not be dropping Trevor Rosenthal based on this news.
Emilio Pagan pitched in the seventh inning on Sunday with the Padres up 8-2. So again, we'll see what happens with this, but I tend to lean with Rosenthal as well being the closer in San Diego. So that means on the other side with the Kansas City Royals, and I don't know if they're done yet. They could still make more moves by the time you're listening to this. I mean, the trade deadline is on Monday. They could still, you know, trade away a few other pieces in that bullpen. Who do you think closes in Kansas City now, Scott?
So my hunch there, and we have less evidence to support this, but I'm thinking it's Scott Barlow. Who it's between him and Josh Staumont, who, you know, they both have the kind of K rate you're looking for in a closer. But Barlow has been better overall. Staumont worked I know he worked earlier in the game Sunday. And they actually gave Jesse Hahn, former starting pitcher Jesse Hahn, I hadn't heard that name in a while. They actually gave him the save on Saturday night, I believe it was.
Yep.
Two out save, but I don't know. I have a hard time taking that one seriously. Barlow, meanwhile, he didn't work that game. He had worked three of the previous four. So maybe that's why they went to Jesse Hahn. And then, of course, on Sunday, they didn't have a save chance. They didn't bring in Barlow at all. They brought in Salmon, like I said earlier in the game. So my hunch is it's going to be Scott Barlow. He's the one I prioritized when picking up Royals relievers and in the leagues where, you know, I'm still searching for saves under every rock and in every crevice.
This situation screams to me that Mike Matheny's just going to mess around. It's going to wind up being Greg Holland, or he'll go back to Ian Kennedy, or he'll just kind of mix and match with all these names. And Jesse Hahn, you mentioned, got the save over the weekend. I would lean towards Barlow as well. I mean, he's been the best in their bullpen outside of Rosenthal, who they traded, but a 1.45 ERA, a 1.01 whip for Scott Barlow this season. So we'll see what happens in their next save opportunity, but Barlow, Stallmont, Hahn, Greg Holland wouldn't surprise me to be in the mix there as well.
But by the way, the other end of that trade, I'm not ruling out still, even though I'm forgetting his name all of a sudden, Edward Olivares, who opened the season getting some at-bats for the Padres, but it was inconsistent. He was kind of a star in preseason and in his minor league numbers last year. Some power, a lot of speed. If he can get more consistent playing time for the Royals, I'm not ruling him out as a potential five outfielder league option, especially for speed, if he finds his way into the Royals lineup regularly.
The Red Sox traded away their first baseman, Mitch Moreland, to the Padres as well for third base prospect Hudson Potts and center fielder Jason Rosario. Does this matter at all, Scott?
Yeah, it does actually, because every time you brought up Mitch Moreland, whose numbers on the year look insane, like an 1100 OPS, I'm like, yeah, but he never starts against the lefties. So how many weeks are you going to feel confident putting him in your lineup? Well, Jace Tingler, who's familiar with him from the time the two spent together in Texas, he says he plans to play him at DH virtually every day, lefties and righties. So that, to me, Moreland's stock goes way up. Now, historically, he hasn't been great against lefties, but I've always been of the impression that I'd rather the guy be in the lineup than not, because even if it drags down his batting average some, like, it's just hard for me to justify a guy who's only playing two-thirds of the time.
Yeah, and it's much easier to justify in a points league because you just want that volume. In a roto league, I can understand not wanting Mitch Moreland to play because then he'll hurt your batting average, and you just don't need as much volume in general. But in a points league, it definitely helps. Mitch Moreland's roster percentage on CBS is 50%. Scott, how much should that be now that he's with the Padres and you expect him to play every day?
So there's still the question of, is he actually
good?
Good. Yeah, because it's an 1177 OPS, by the way.
Oh,
but he's a 34-year-old who's never in a full season. He only has one 800 OPS season. Or two, actually. He deserves to be up in more than 50%. I don't know that he deserves to be more than like 65%. But some of those deeper lineup leagues with the corner infield spot, he probably deserves to be picked up in some of those.
The fallout on the other side, again, is for the Red Sox. Bobby Dalbec is their one of their top prospects, and he is 9% rostered. He was a third base prospect. He has third base eligibility. He can play first base. He played first base on Sunday in his debut, so he is going to have dual position eligibility. Definitely has some pop. He homered in his first game to opposite field, right around pesky pole. He has 59 home runs over the last two minor league seasons for the Red Sox, but he strikes out a decent bit, Scott. I would expect someone who is going to hurt your batting average here, but can provide some pop.
Yeah, maybe. He certainly has a reputation as the three true outcomes guy in the minors. Walks a lot, strikes out a lot, hits home runs, and he'll hit a lot of home runs. But last year, he actually lowered his strikeout rate between double and triple A. He lowered it to less than 25%. It was up over 30 every year before that. I mean, he was looking like a poor man's Joey Gallo, basically. But it really cut down on those strikeouts last year. It didn't get much attention because he still hit 239, but a big drop in BABIP, obviously, for him to hit for a lower batting average while striking out a lot less. So I'm not... So there's a chance he kind of broke through as a hitter last year, and just because of bad luck, it didn't show up in the numbers. I'm very interested in watching Bobby Dahl back, and in any league where you're hurting for power. Like, I picked him up in Tout Wars this week. That's a 15-team roto league. So, you know, it's on the deeper side for sure, but I have some interest there.
Do you think he should be owned in 12-team roto leagues for now, Scott, that have the corner infielder?
Probably not. I mean, it depends how badly you need power, how badly you need an extra corner infielder.
Fair enough. The Padres also acquired Austin Nola in a much bigger trade. The Padres received Nola, Dan Altavilla, and Austin Adams from the Mariners, and the Mariners in return received Ty France, Taylor Trammell, Andres Munoz, and Luis Torrens. I would imagine that this is actually a bad move for Austin Nola's fantasy value, Scott, because I don't know that he's going to play as much as he did before in Seattle, where he would get some time at DH, would get some time at first base. I think that he's going to catch probably the majority of the time for the Padres, but they also acquired Jason Castro. So I think this is like a net negative for Austin Nola.
It may just erase what Tingler said about Mitch Moreland, too, about him playing every day.
Right.
Maybe AJ Preller heard that and was like, oh man, I better get him a platoon partner at DH. Yeah, it seems more likely to hurt Austin Nola's value. Then I always got to remember I say the right first name with Nola. Austin Nola's fantasy value seems like it would hurt more than it would help. Nonetheless, there have been so few contributors at catcher that it's not like, you know, I'm hitting drop now as somebody who has Nola. Let's see how it goes. Hopefully he doesn't lose too much time.
Yeah, you definitely hold on to Nola because the catcher position, and we talk about it a lot, it's just been an absolute crapshoot. Keep him on your team, but keep the expectations realistic for Austin Nola. The Angels traded away your boy, Scott, Tommy La Stella, to the Oakland A's for Franklin Barreto, and then the Angels placed Franklin Barreto on the COVID IL. I think this is kind of a similar situation to Austin Nola. I don't think you just have to drop Tommy La Stella or anything. I don't think you should, but I think this is probably a net negative because it's a negative park shift for Tommy La Stella.
Well, Angel Stadium's not a good place to hit.
No, it's not.
I don't know. I wasn't viewing it that way. The Athletics have been really, really hurting at second base. So I definitely think the playing time is going to be there for Tommy La Stella. He wasn't really hitting that high in the Angels lineup anyway. So yeah, I see this as basically a lateral move for Tommy La Stella and not changing his value at all.
The Orioles traded away Michael Givens to the Colorado Rockies. Scott, do you expect Daniel Barr to continue closing, or do you think Michael Givens might be in the mix here?
It was weird how the Orioles didn't just make Michael Givens their closer either last year or this year, especially this year, because this year he seems to be back on track with awesome numbers, 1.38 ERA in 12 appearances, 19 strikeouts in 13 innings, big bat misser. And that's what he's been for most of his career. So I suspect he'll just slot in as the closer for the Rockies. The only hesitation there is that he hasn't been a closer before, but you know, neither has Bard. And it's not like Bard has been locked down since they moved him into the role.
That is fair. Michael Givens is 14% rostered, Scott. If Daniel Bard was your worst reliever in a roto league, would you drop him for Michael Givens?
I done did it in Tout Wars.
Oof.
I done did it.
Fair enough. All right, a few more trades to get to. Not that these really matter all that much, but the Pirates traded away Jerod Dyson to the White Sox. The Rays traded Jose Martinez to the Cubs for a player to be named later. And no, I lied. This is probably the biggest news of the weekend. How did it take me this long to get to it? The Orioles traded away Tommy Malone to the Atlanta Braves, Scott. Man, I mean, what a crazy move.
Their rotation problems are solved. They flew him in on a private jet so that he wouldn't have to go through COVID intake and they wouldn't have to put him on the COVID IL like the Angels did with Franklin Barreto. They flew him in on a private jet so that he could start Sunday's game against the Phillies. and he promptly gives up 7 earned runs in 2 1/3 innings. So I hope the Braves are very much in the mix for Mike Clevinger and or Lance Lynn.
And it sounds like they are. Those are a few of the other big names that are being discussed right now as the trade deadline approaches. And, of course, we will update you on those trades tomorrow. Clevinger, Lance Lynn, Joey Gallo's name has been thrown around, Josh Hader, Starling Marte, Archie Bradley, and a few other names as well. So we'll see what happens. It's a fun time. It's a crazy time to be a baseball fan and a fantasy baseball player. Some other news and notes. Gavin Lux was actually called up over the weekend. He picked up his first 2 hits on Sunday, and I plan to slot him in as my 16th second baseman in the ranks. Scott, just behind Jeff McNeil, Robinson Cano, and Jake Cronenworth, just ahead of Eduardo Escobar and Tommy Edman. Does that sound like it makes sense for Gavin Lux?
Yes. The ones you're slotting ahead of him, I might have in a different order. Okay. But yeah, that sounds like the right place to put him among those five.
Ronald Acuna left Sunday night's game against the Phillies with hamstring tightness. Manager Brian Snitker said on the ESPN broadcast that he expects Acuna to be in the lineup Monday, which sounds very optimistic. And I believe there is an early game Monday, so make sure you're paying attention to what's happening and setting your lineups before that game.
Worth noting, they had a 10-0 lead at the time they took him out.
True.
It very quickly became 10-7. It may have been 10-1, actually, but they had a huge lead. So, you know, they took their foot off the gas, I guess the way Fernando Tatis was supposed to with only a 7-run lead.
Right. That's a good point that you bring up, man. But look, anything can happen when Tommy Malone is on the mound, Scott. I mentioned there is an early game on Monday at 1 o'clock, the Mets and the Marlins. At 2 o'clock, you have the Orioles and the Blue Jays. And at 4 o'clock, you have the Mariners and the Angels. So just pay attention to those and make sure to set your lineups. The Yankees optioned Davey Garcia to their alternate site after his start Sunday. And it was a fantastic start. 6 innings of one-run ball. The one run that was allowed was an unearned run. 0 walks, 6 strikeouts, 7 swinging strikes on 75 pitches. Mainly four-seam and the curve. He averaged around 92 miles per hour on his fastball. Scott, he could be back on Friday as the 29th man once again, as the Yankees have a doubleheader with the Orioles. He is 23% rostered and one of the most added players on CBS right now.
Yeah, I don't see why they couldn't have kept him instead of Michael King. I don't know what the big deal with Michael King is. It was nice that Garcia didn't walk anybody because walks were a big problem for him in the minors last year. I was a little surprised he didn't miss more bats than he did, but you know, major league debut. So he's on the list of pitchers to consider adding. I don't think he'll be down for long. I wasn't so blown away by his debut that it's a huge priority for me off the waiver wire. I'm frankly more interested in the guy who came back for the White Sox and started on Saturday or Sunday. And that guy is Dane Dunning. That's who I'd be prioritizing over Davey Garcia. That's D-E-I-V-I-G-A-R-C-I-A. Dane Dunning. Dane Dunning. Remember Dane Dunning, Frank?
Remember
how he made his debut against the Tigers a couple weeks ago. Mano a mano against Casey Mize in his debut, actually, and had 17 whiffs on 73 pitches. Well, he comes back for the White Sox. Dane Dunning does. And pitches a gem against the Royals. And that gem, he didn't allow a single hit in 5 innings. He struck out 7. This time he had 13 swinging strikes on 79 pitches. He looks great. He looks really good. And the minor league track record is very strong. He doesn't have a lot of prospect hype, but getting a lot of whiffs with that slider, especially. I wish his first two appearances weren't against the Tigers and Royals. It'd be nice if we could see him tested against a tougher lineup, but there's no way that's preventing me from picking him up. That's, you know, unless you're in a league where Sixto Sanchez or Corbin Burns were available, that's the most exciting pickup from the weekend, Dane Dunning.
17% rostered, and I mentioned Davey Garcia is all the way up to 23%. So he's already rostered in more leagues than Dane Dunning. And I think that's just like the Yankees prospect tax that you have to pay. And I agree. I would rather have Dane Dunning as well. And if all things go well, he should be starting against the Royals again this week. So let's hope he remains in the rotation. He should, considering Gio Gonzalez was placed on the IL Sunday. Keegan Aiken, former second-round pick for the Baltimore Orioles, will make his first career start on Monday. Any interest, Scott?
No, no. Let's see how he does.
JD Martinez was pulled Sunday after getting hit by a pitch on the wrist. X-rays came back negative. He is batting .208 with a .674 OPS. The quality of contact is way, way down for JD Martinez, so hopefully he gets better. Maybe he's been dealing with something, but it has not been a great season. Look, and this has happened for a lot of early round picks we've already talked about so far this year. Marcus Semien is dealing with soreness in his left side. An MRI was taken on Saturday and showed no structural damage. Michael Pineda, who is returning from suspension, will make his season debut for the Twins on Tuesday against the White Sox, which might make him a two-star pitcher, Scott. Is that correct?
I have him down for a two-star pitcher. As a two-star pitcher, of course, no guarantees. I added him to my 10 sleeper pitchers for the upcoming week. The second matchup is against the Tigers. Not that the Whites, I mean, the White Sox have a good offense, but they strike out a lot. So that's not such a bad first matchup either. I suspect, you know, I'm not sure Pineda will be allowed to go five in that first start because, well, he is stretched out from his time working out at the alternate training site. Generally, those the number of pitches somebody throws down there aren't treated the same way as in an actual game. But, you know, we've been surprised before, obviously, with Tristan McKenzie and Ian Anderson both going six as soon as they were called up. Maybe Pineda will. And as I pointed out on Thursday's show or Friday's show, I believe, Pineda was really strong down the stretch for the Twins last year before he got suspended. I don't have the numbers pulled up, but it seemed like he was getting his changeup to behave like a true third pitch, and his numbers really took off. I got the numbers here now. His last 11 starts, a 2.76 ERA, 73 strikeouts and 65 in a third innings. And of course, he's always been a good control guy. So Michael Pineda is behind Dane Dunning as far as starting pitcher pickups go, but he's pretty high priority for me.
27% rostered is Michael Pineda. Charlie Morton, who was dealing with a shoulder injury, is on track to rejoin the Rays rotation on Tuesday or Wednesday against the Yankees. Elvis Andrus, dealing with a back, is expected to be activated for the Rangers road trip, which begins Tuesday. Walker Buehler, dealing with a blister, threw a 30-pitch bullpen session Saturday. His IL stay should be a short one. J.D. Davis left game two of Sunday's doubleheader against the Yankees with a left hip issue. He was hit by a fastball on his hip on Saturday against the Yankees, which might have still been affecting him on Sunday. And we have another mini, hopefully it doesn't get out of hand, COVID situation with the Oakland A's, where one of the people in their organization, I don't know if it was specified whether it was a player or just like a manager or someone else.
I didn't see.
But someone in their organization.
As far as I know, just one positive test. And usually in those cases, you know, obviously they're testing everybody the next few days, but the turnaround time for the team playing has been quicker for that than when, you know, there's positive test after positive test turning up.
So would you start your A's this week, Scott? That's the question.
Not if I could help it. I mean, Marcus Semien, no, because he's also dealing with the injury. You know, Mark Canha, I'd probably avoid. Who else is a must from that? Matt Olson and Matt Chapman, the Mats. Yeah, it would depend on if I could find a good enough alternative. I'd be a little fearful of it, and the Mariners as well, because that's the first series they're scheduled to face. It's possible that could get axed still, or at least the first two games from it. Maybe a doubleheader on the third day. Second series the A's are in line to play is against the Padres. Not so worried about that. That one is probably safe unless more positive tests turn up.
Yes. So pay attention to your Oakland A's. Some weekend standouts. We'll start with some waiver wire names here, Scott. And Some hitters that stood out to me, Nick Madrigal was activated on Friday. He went 3-for-4 on Sunday with an RBI and his first career stolen base. He is 38% rostered. He plays 7 games this week. Ryan Mountcastle, 3 hits on Sunday, including a double dong, his first and second career home runs for Ryan Mountcastle, 3 RBI, 2 runs scored in his first 8 games to 6 strikeouts and 4 walks. He has dual eligibility, first base and outfield eligibility, 29% rostered. He has 7 games this week. And then Willy Adames, who is someone we've talked about before, but we always kind of gloss over him. 2 more hits on Sunday, including a grand slam, his 4th homer of the season. He is batting .283 with an .886 OPS. His hard contact is way up. He is striking out a lot. He is 35% rostered. All 3 of these names are below 40% on CBS Sports. Scott, Madrigal, Mountcastle, Willy Adames. How would you rank those 3 in terms of your interest?
Mountcastle, Madrigal, and Willy Adames a distant third. His XBA is only .250. His X-Slug is only .419. He's obviously outperforming both. As you mentioned, the strikeout rate for Willy Adames is terrible. So I don't have a lot of trust in him, but excited. The Mountcastle's up. He's not, he hasn't buried himself in strikeouts yet. Hit his first 2 home runs. 7-game week coming up. Excited about him. Madrigal, I don't know that I'm activating him everywhere, but a guy who should hit for batting average and steal bases. So, in roto leagues especially, he deserves to be more than 38% rostered.
Yes, I agree. And it's going to be harder to get him in head-to-head points leagues, but roto, as you mentioned, you're hurting at second base, you need a middle infield spot, even utility. If you need stolen bases, Madrigal is someone who can definitely help there. I said last week that I would start Ryan Mountcastle over Josh Bell. Josh Bell's starting to heat up a little bit, Scott.
He is. He is, as a matter of fact. He homered twice over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And not only that, but 6 strikeouts in his last 9 games. That's encouraging. I mean, it doesn't mean he's over the hump with the strikeouts, but the strikeouts were really uncharacteristic for him. And so if he's cut down on those, then maybe it's all about to round into form here. I'd be reluctant to sit him this week. After you've already suffered through so much misery, like, you want to get the good end of that too. It'd have to be a pretty good alternative. They have eight games coming up. The Pirates do. A lot of teams are playing 8 games this week, by the way.
Yeah, I know you mentioned Hosmer and Cronenworth. You still start those 2 names over Josh Bell, Scott?
I don't know that I would this week.
Okay.
They only have 6 games. 3 are against lefties, at least if nothing changes. Not saying either of them is a bad start. I think I'd be looking to get Josh Bell active.
Fair. Some of the waiver wire pitchers from the weekend, we already spoke about. Look, Burns, must add, obviously. Sixto Sanchez, Dane Dunning, Michael Pineda, Davey Garcia, a name that we've already mentioned, but a few others here. Tyler Malley on Friday, 6 2/3, 2 hits, 2 earned, 11 strikeouts, 19 swinging strikes on 106 pitches. Went heavy with the slider in Friday start against the Cubs. 12 of his whiffs came on the slider. He is 30% rostered. Tony Gonsolin was at the Rangers on Sunday. Wasn't great, wasn't bad. 3 innings, 1 run, 5 strikeouts, but only 62 pitches. He faces the Rockies at home this week. Matthew Boyd going up against the Minnesota Twins on Saturday. 6 innings, 2 runs, only 1 of those were earned, 6 strikeouts, 0 walks. This is now 2 solid starts in a row for Matthew Boyd. His 2 best starts of the season, where he has gone changeup heavy. Taijuan Walker traded to the Toronto Blue Jays in his debut, 6 shutout, 4 strikeouts. He has quality starts in 4 of his last 5. And then Jay Happ on Saturday against the Mets was great. 7 1/3, shutout, 5 strikeouts, 0 walks. And according to Fangraphs, he is throwing a split finger fastball this year, which is something that he has never done. He is 55% rostered. So, Scott, rank for me Malley, Gonsolin, Matthew Boyd, Taijuan Walker, and Jay Happ.
I'm going to go Boyd number 1. Really encouraged by the last 2 starts. He faced the Twins and didn't give up any home runs. I mean, that is an accomplishment for that guy specifically. And maybe he's finally figured out the right pitch mix here. Encouraging stuff. Malley, he might have figured out the right pitch mix too. He seems to have a really good slider now. Was always so fastball heavy in his career, struggled to face the lineup. You know, more than I think he'd struggle through the second time through the lineup even. But he's been much better with that this year, been in and out of the rotation. And even now, they have six healthy arms. I don't know if they're to the point where they're going to give Malley preferential treatment over Anthony DeSclafani. So that's my hesitation there. They do have a need for both this week with the doubleheader coming up. So we're not going to find out the answer to that for a while. So Boyd, Malley, then probably Gonsolin, then Walker, who I don't see much in the underlying stats to, even though the ERA is good, I don't see a lot to get excited about there. And then J-Hap bringing up the rear.
No love for my Yankees, J-Hap. I get it. It's fine. For Taijuan Walker, he's at the Red Sox this week. They are 25th in WOBA against right-handed pitching this season. What do you think about Walker in that start, Scott? If you have him on your team, start or sit Taijuan Walker?
Against Boston, you said?
Yes. At Fenway.
He's not in my 10 sleeper pitchers for this upcoming week, but you could do worse. I think if it was like a daily league situation, I think I'd plan to start him.
Okay, and these names are all behind Dane Dunning, right?
Yeah. Oh, they're all behind Dunning. By the way, I started to rethink that Josh Bell over Eric Hosmer and Jake Cronenworth thing, because though the Pirates are playing eight games, they got some really tough pitchers. I think I'd probably stick with Hosmer and Cronenworth, but I still would try to get Bell in the lineup if I did have an opening.
And I would start Mountcastle over Bell. It might be a little reactionary. I'm a big Mountcastle fan. I was waiting for him to come up last year patiently. I was holding him on every team. I think the kid can play. I like what I've seen from the plate discipline thus far. Good ballpark to hit in Camden as well. I'm pretty excited about Ryan Mountcastle. Not that I don't like Josh Bell. It's just he has struggled.
I've been high on Mountcastle for a while now, too, to the point that I thought I may have been overhyping him in spring training. But, decent matchups for the Orioles this week. I do think I'd start Bell over Mountcastle, but I do like Mountcastle as a sleeper hitter this week.
Scott, now that I'm hosting, we can overhype Ryan Mountcastle together, which is what I'm excited about.
I compared him to Nick Castellanos before the season started.
Ooh.
That was before I went Nick Castellanos crazy. So
right.
It was like an old standard for Castellanos that I was comparing him to. But then when he got called up, I started throwing around these Jose Abreu comps. That was before Jose Abreu had that weekend where he homered six times. So I keep like, my comps keep price, you know, they keep
elevating,
they keep
themselves.
Making themselves so they don't apply anymore. They keep disqualifying themselves as Mountcastle comps.
Well, hopefully Mountcastle just continues to climb with some of those names that you have compared him to as well. The weekend drop-o-meter, Scott. Casey Mize against the Minnesota Twins on Sunday. He wasn't bad. The problem was he only pitched three innings. He had four strikeouts, two earned runs, only 67 pitches. What is the drop-o-meter for Casey Mize?
It's probably about a six. I'd prefer not to, but if, you know, I'd drop him for Dane Dunning. I'd drop him for Michael Pineda. There are definitely some names out there I'd drop him for, because I don't see myself using him until he shows he can go at least five.
Yeah.
Has he gone five yet?
No.
I don't think he has.
He has not pitched. I believe his debut, he went 4 1/3, the same as Dane Dunning, and that was the furthest he went in any start. Randy Dobnak basically got hit with all of his regression in one start on Saturday against the Tigers, too. It was a great matchup for my boy, the stash, Randy Dobnak. 4 1/3, 12 hits, 6 earned runs. Even with that, his ERA is now up to 3.12. He is 84% rostered, Scott. Dobnak, drop-o-meter.
He was due for some regression. Ground ball pitchers, and he is among the most extreme. They give up some hits sometimes, but only two of those 12 hits were for extra bases. They were both doubles. I still think he's a good enough source of ERA and a stable enough pitcher that you're going to want him in your lineup more often than not based on what the pitching crop looks like. Not a stud. I never claimed he was a stud, but I do think he's good enough.
So where is he on the drop-o meter? Is he? Would you rather drop him or
exercise, right?
Him or Casey Mize? Who would you drop first?
I would drop Mize first. I'll put Dobnak as a five.
Luke Weaver was back to puke Weaver on Saturday against the Giants. Again, it's Dobnak. We like the matchup. Luke Weaver was pitching well. And if you were in a daily league, I would have said, all right, go ahead and start Luke Weaver against the Giants. Three innings, eight hits, four earned, one walk. Still had a ton of strikeouts, six strikeouts for Luke Weaver on Saturday. Where is he on the drop-o meter, Scott?
He is probably an eight, maybe a nine. Yeah, it's he has, like, his fastball and changeup have both been getting more whiffs this year. Like, in that way, he looks better, but he's just getting knocked around too much.
Yeah, it's tough to trust him too. Like, it looked like he was getting back on track, but we've seen so much bad and not nearly enough good out of Luke Weaver. So, yeah, I'm all right dropping him for a lot of the names that we mentioned, especially if you need a starting pitcher heading into week seven. Sandy Alcantara was back on Sunday against the Tampa Bay Rays, and he kind of wishes that he weren't because he allowed eight runs. Five of those were earned over four innings pitch. It was his first start back from COVID, 69% rostered. He is at Tampa Bay this week. Scott, if you were waiting for Sandy Alcantara and you're seeing all these other names pop up around you, where does he rank on the drop-o-meter? Would you drop him for someone like Michael Pineda or Dane Dunning?
Yeah, I think so. I'd put him at about a six, like Mize. Rather not drop him. The velocity was there, so if you had faith in him in the first place, and his first start before the COVID outbreak was very good, I'd still prefer to hold on to Alcantara, but there are higher priorities.
Chris Bassitt has a 5.95 ERA over his last four starts. He got off to a nice start this season, but seems like he is crashing back down to earth. He is 75% rostered. Scott, drop-o meter on Chris Bassitt.
That is probably about a 9, if not a 10. There's not much reason to give him special preferential treatment.
I've got to ask this last name, and it hurts, Scott. It hurts so much. But Frankie Montas on Saturday at the Houston Astros, 3 1/3, six hits, five earned, two walks, five strikeouts. Strikeouts still there. He has allowed 18 earned runs over his last three starts. That is the equivalent of a 16.76 ERA. 92% rostered is Frankie Montas. What are we doing, Scott?
Hate to say it, Frankie, but I'm worried about our boy Frankie.
Ugh.
Because I've been harping on the splitter usage, right? It was down at the start. It went up a little bit. It's been back down again recently. But based on the way the splitter is performing, it makes perfect sense because Frankie Montas, remind me, did he start Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday.
Saturday. Frankie Montas' splitter. Some bad news here on the splitter, if I can find it. Yes, I can. So last year, his splitter, it yielded a 155 batting average and a 107 ISO. 155 and 107. This year, that splitter, a 368 batting average and a 316 ISO. Now, the whiff rate is still high on it, but that's getting too hard. that's getting hit too hard for him to really be throwing it that much. So that was the key to his breakthrough last year. If he doesn't have that splitter anymore, bad times ahead. So on the drop-o meter, I'd give him probably a seven.
A seven?
Yeah.
Scott, you would drop Frankie Montas before you would drop Casey Mize and Sandy Alcantara?
I think that's what I'm saying, yeah. Oh. Clearly you disagree.
No.
Did my splitter argument
you
not
laid it
make
out,
a strong enough impression?
You laid it out beautifully, and man, I hear you. Oh, gosh. This is one of those things where I think I just don't want it to be true. I think like I have too much emotional attachment here to Frankie Montas, but yeah, you know, I got to take a step back, and sometimes you got to do that in fantasy baseball. You have to remove the emotional attachment. Me personally, I would drop Mize and Alcantara before I would drop Montas, but
all right, it's getting up there. Let me sober up a little here.
It's probably like a four for me for Montas.
Maybe you're right. I don't have a lot of trust in Montas anymore, but what is my trust level in those two? It's not super high either. It's really a stashing for the upside situation for all three. Okay. I'll put him on the same level, a six, as those two on my drop-a-meter. But it's not so far-fetched that you would drop Montas, is what I'm trying to say.
No, it's not, especially in like a 10-team league. I could definitely see doing that. Do it for Burns. Definitely. You do it for Sixto Sanchez. Sixto.
Yeah.
Do it for Dunning.
I think I would.
Okay. Pineda?
I might draw the line there. I might have to see how Pineda's first start goes.
Okay. I would say bench Montas this week. He is at home against the Padres, but the Padres lineup has been hot. And
definitely bench him. Yeah.
You know, I'd rather see him.
I have to see him have a really good start again before I'd start Montas. I mean, his ERA is up over five now. The last three starts have been so bad.
Yeah, it's been a rough go. All right, move on from the waiver wire. We'll take a quick break here. Want to quickly remind people that for more than a decade, Fantasy Football Today has been delivering league-winning analysis and advice as part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Now they're coming to you fast with a brand new feed. Don't worry, the old one will stay the same. The Fantasy Football Today in 5 podcast is your audio outlet for fantasy news and advice in 5 minutes or fewer. It'll feature familiar voices like Adam Azer and the rest of the FFT crew, Jamie Eisenberg, Dave Richard, Heath Cummings, and Ben Gretsch, as they break down what matters most to help you win your league in a quick-hitting format available first thing in the morning. On Monday, August 31st, you can subscribe to FFT in 5. Monday through Friday, download and subscribe to FFT in 5 on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, your smart speakers, and anywhere else podcasts are found. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we have a bunch more to get to regarding this weekend. We'll do that here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're back here on Fantasy Baseball Today. Before we get into some of these clusters of players from the weekend, I do want to talk about some of these deeper league potential adds. Scott, I'll just mention a name, what they did. You tell me your interest level in deeper leagues. Leody Taveras, someone we mentioned before, prospect for the Rangers, has started 6 straight games, at least one hit in 5 of them. He hit his first home run over the weekend, 5% rostered, 6 games this week. Leody Taveras.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's not a strong offensive track record in the minors, so he has to do a lot more than this to get me interested.
Justin Dunn was at the Angels this weekend. 6 shutout, only one hit allowed, 4 walks, don't love that, 6 strikeouts over his last 2 starts, 12 innings pitched, 2 hits, 12 strikeouts. Justin Dunn, 10% rostered. He faces the Rangers this week, Scott.
2 total hits over his last 2 starts?
Yeah.
Wow. Hmm. My interest level is growing. It's a high threshold to beat its starting pitcher, but like he was borderline top 100 type prospect, and yeah, I think it bears watching.
Josh Fleming was at the Marlins on Saturday. 5 1/3, 3 hits, 0 earned, 0 walks, 6 strikeouts. 11% rostered. Josh Fleming faces the Marlins again this week, Scott. I've actually picked him up in a few 15-team leagues, and I'm starting him.
Yeah, it's been the first two starts have been good, and who knows what kind of progress he'd been making at the alternate site before he got called up, but it's a guy who was consistently below 7K per nine in the minors. I'm not that interested.
A pair of Tigers. Miguel Cabrera has 10 hits over his last five games. He is 30% rostered. His batting average is .241. Expected batting average, .294, Miguel Cabrera. And then Jamer Candelario has homered in back-to-back games. He has multiple hits in three of his last four. He is 14% rostered. A pair of Tigers here, Scott.
They're both kind of interesting. I think it's too early in a standard league to jump at them. But Miguel Cabrera, you mentioned that .294 xBA. It's a .481 x slug too. And Candelario similar now, .292 xBA, .482 slug. Of course, Candelario's been so hot that I think his actual batting average and slug are both higher than that. Yeah, they are. Candelario looks like he's made some changes to approach, actually walking less. He was a guy who always walked a lot, but hitting more line drives, and it may be more appropriate and a more appropriate level of aggression for him. Sometimes the emphasis on walks can hold a hitter back. So I'd be keeping an eye on those two and picking them up only in an emergency situation right now, though.
Garrett Cooper had two hits on Sunday. He actually returned for the Miami Marlins this weekend. Hit a home run on Sunday with four RBI. He has dual eligibility, first base and outfield, 10% rostered. Garrett Cooper.
He's always been kind of interesting. Got an extended look last year and didn't end up doing that much. So I'm not super excited to pick him up, but I could definitely see him being a sleeper hitter in future weeks if he gets hot.
Brian O'Grady, admittedly never heard of this guy before Sunday. Outfielder for the Tampa Bay Rays, two hits on Sunday with a stolen base. He had 28 homers and 20 steals in the minors last season, hit .280 with a .909 OPS, but he's old. He's 28 years old. Brian O'Grady.
Yeah, interest level's pretty low. I'll just leave it at that. The Rays obviously have a ton of options.
We will leave it there. Jason Hayward, 15% rostered. He has three home runs in his last three games. He is hitting a ton of line drives, Scott. Jason Hayward.
Yeah, a ton of line drives, and his expected numbers are pretty wild, too. He has an expected batting average of over .300.
Yep. And that is in the 91st percentile.
Yeah. It's not common to see. And the ex-WOBA, I think, is like 420-something. Really high. I mean, ex-WOBA is weighted like on-base percentage. So, you know, it takes into account more than just on-base percentage. It takes into account the full spectrum of players' offensive production. But it's weighted like OBP. So 420 is really, really good. Not hitting the ball especially hard. So I'm kind of curious how he comes to have those expected stats, Jason Hayward. But I'm not somebody who's just going to ignore them if I need an outfielder. He's pretty interesting.
Yeah, especially in deeper roto leagues. The Cubs do play seven games this week. He's only 15% rostered. That number should probably be higher for Jason Hayward. We had signs of life from these players. Over the weekend, we mentioned Josh Bell. He has homered in back-to-back days. He has six hits over his last four games. A pair of Dodgers, Max Muncy, hit his ninth home run Saturday. He has three home runs in his last seven games. Cody Bellinger hit his 10th home run and stole his third base of the season on Sunday. He is batting .378 over his last 10 games. Rafael Devers went 4-for-4 with a double dong, three RBI and three runs scored on Sunday as well. He is coming around. I think it was like three or four games before this. Slowed down again. He's been inconsistent, but we are starting to see some more of these bigger games out of Rafael Devers. Joe Adele hit his first two home runs of his career on Saturday. He is struggling mightily outside of that. His teammate Griffin Canning finally got back on track Sunday against the Mariners. Eight innings of one-run ball, seven strikeouts. And then Rhys Hoskins, back-to-back multi-hit games. He has a home run in four of his last six. So a lot of names on this list, Scott, that people have been freaking out, asking, what do I do with Rhys Hoskins? What a worryometer for Cody Bellinger. Those guys are coming around. I would say the ones for me that I'm actually a little bit more concerned about are Joe Adele and Griffin Canning.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Muncy, Bellinger, Devers, even Hoskins to a degree, you could look at their numbers and say, okay, they're going to pick it up. It seems like they are, and you obviously need to have him in your lineup now. But Adele, just the fact he hit two home runs, I mean, it doesn't erase that he has a 41.1% strikeout rate. His XBA is actually 173.
Ugh.
Yeah. So it's going to take more than that for me to get interested in playing Joe Adele. This was Griffin Canning's best start since that very first start of the season when I excitedly decided he was back and must roster and all of that. 14 swinging strikes. I think that equals his number from that first start. It was against the Mariners, and the slider, he got three of the swinging strikes on the slider. It had been basically invisible for him all year, so that's not nothing, but it's still not like back to where it was last year. I'm not sure I'm rushing to pick up Griffin Canning after this start, based on the way the previous few went.
He has 41% rostered. Scott, if you own Griffin Canning, he's going up against the Houston Astros this week. That other start that he had this season that was his only other quality start also came against the Astros. Would you start or sit Griffin Canning?
Sit.
How about some of these names? Dylan Cease was up against the Royals this weekend. 4 1/3. He only allowed one hit, one earned, 6 walks. Seemed like only a matter of time before the command came back to bite Dylan Cease. 5 strikeouts. He is at the Kansas City Royals again this week. Start or sit, Scott?
I would probably start still. He gave up, what, 2 hits?
Only one hit, but 6 walks. One hit. Yeah.
Yeah, the control's been a blight for him, but he's still thrived for the most part with these easy AL Central matchups and gets another next week.
Tarik Skubal, first solid start was against the Twins of all teams on Saturday. 5 innings, 2 earned runs with only 2 strikeouts, 25% rostered. If you do have him, Scott, would you start him at the Twins this week?
No.
No.
No, got to see more missed bats from him.
Another Angel, that was great. Kind of helps when you face the Seattle Mariners. On Friday, Andrew Heaney, 7 2/3, 1 earned, 10 strikeouts. 74% rostered. He's going up against the Padres this week. Starter sit Andrew Heaney, Scott.
I would sit with that matchup. He had 23 whiffs against the Mariners, though.
Oof.
Fastball, curveball, changeups, all contributing a healthy number. Like, and he's basically leveled off into doing the same thing he was doing last year with those 3 pitches all being effective, him getting a ton of swinging strikes, and yet the ERA is over 4. Maybe better days are ahead, but Heaney still looks pretty fringy, even though he has a talent for missing bats.
Tristan McKenzie, 4 innings of 2-run ball on Friday against the Cardinals this past Friday. He is at Kansas City this week. Would you start Tristan McKenzie, Scott?
I would, yeah. I mean, obviously the follow-up performance here was disappointment after that great, great debut he had. But Royals, much easier matchup. And, you know, it's not like he got pounded by the Cardinals. So I'd run him out there again.
Dustin May is at the Texas. He was at the Texas Rangers on Friday. 6 innings of 2-run ball. Really does not get a lot of strikeouts, but he has been solid. He's allowed 2 runs or less in all 7 of his starts this season. He's going up against the Diamondbacks this week. Scott, would you start Dustin May?
Yeah, I think so. I think I would. That's a good enough matchup. The XFIP's not looking so great for him. So just keep that in mind. He's been bankable in terms of run prevention. He's a good ground ball pitcher, has not been a big strikeout pitcher. And, you know, he may be overachieving some, but I do think the talent level is high enough that I give him the benefit of the doubt to a degree there, and probably stick with him in most leagues.
The last name I wanted to mention here, Adam Wainwright, a complete game on Sunday against Cleveland. 2 earned runs, 9 strikeouts. He is at the Cubs this week. Would you start him, Scott?
I would not start Adam Wainwright. No, sorry. I got confused there. Cleveland, Cubs, you said. He just started against Cleveland and had that great start. Yeah. He's a good matchups type because he goes deep into games, gets ground balls with the curveball. The 9 strikeouts were a surprise. I wouldn't expect that from him again. But the Cubs matchup, that's not one I'd be using Wainwright in.
Fair enough. There were a few other names that we didn't get to. I know that there's a lighter schedule on Monday, so maybe we'll have some weekend leftovers that we can get to on the podcast we record Monday night. Heading into Tuesday, of course, Chris Paddock bounced back, as did McCullers, Carrasco, so I would like to talk about some of those guys. And Luis Castillo continues to not be good, so I think we'll talk about those names, but I did want to get to some bullpen stuff here, Scott. And the closer whisperer strikes again, Scott. You mentioned Gregory Soto. You thought he might be the guy. Saves on back-to-back days. Run some other names by you. Gregory Soto, Tyler Rogers, 2 saves this weekend. He is only 9% rostered. Who would you rather have between those two, Soto or Tyler Rogers?
Are you sure it was 2 saves this weekend for Tyler Rogers or just...
He picked up 1 on Sunday, I believe.
Yeah, one on Saturday. Did he get one? Because Sam Coonrod got a save for the Giants on Sunday. I don't know if did they play a doubleheader. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Rogers pitched the 8th,
no,
setting up Sam Coonrod. Rogers did have a save earlier in August, but that was can't really tie those two together. Yeah, I think that's very much up in the air for the Giants. So. Tyler Rogers probably the leading guy there, but I'd rather have Soto for the Tigers.
That makes sense. And apologies for getting that wrong regarding Tyler Rogers. The Orioles and the Blue Jays had a ton just going all over the place on Sunday. Anthony Bass allowed the go-ahead run to score in the top of the 9th. Cole Sulcer then blew the save, and he took the loss. He allowed 2 runs in the bottom of the 9th. Hunter Harvey was activated Sunday, but apparently will be eased into the role for Baltimore. Scott, the next save opportunity for the Orioles will go to blank.
I think it'll go to Hunter Harvey since Sulcer blew up. And, I thought that was a pretty surprising admission that they said he'll be eased into the closer role because he was never confirmed to be at the closer at the start of things. So they kind of played their hand stronger than they have before. And it was, I think it was the bullpen coach talking, Darren Holmes, and not the manager. So take it with a grain of salt, maybe, but yeah, Hunter Harvey, I think, is somebody who is worth picking up if you're really hurting for saves. I'd still prioritize Gregory Soto over him, but probably Harvey over Tyler Rogers.
Josh Hader blew a save on Saturday, 5 walks, 2 earned runs. If Hader were traded, I think Devin Williams would be the next man up. The numbers look phenomenal for Devin Williams, and he actually closed out that game on Saturday, so that's who I think it would be. Craig Kimbrell blew another save on Saturday in Game 2 of their doubleheader, 3 walks, 2 earned. Jeremy Jeffress had a clean save in Game 1, so I would assume that Jeremy Jeffress gets the next opportunity for the Chicago Cubs. Brandon Workman picked up 2 saves over the weekend. He now has 3 straight scoreless outings. Still giving up some hits and walks, but the fact that he's not giving up runs is a step in the right direction for Brandon Workman. To stream or not to stream, we'll end with this, Scott. And your boy, Trevor Rogers for the Marlins, is going up against the Mets in that matinee game on Monday. Would you stream him?
I wouldn't. I kind of like the skill set there, but I need to see a lot more before I actually use Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers. Jacob DeGrom is on the other side. He is a must start. Keegan Aiken, we spoke about. You're not streaming him here, right, Scott?
Nope.
Chase Anderson going up against the Orioles.
I would not do that.
Marco Gonzalez at the Angels.
I think so. I think I'd go with Marco.
Jaime Barria against the Mariners.
He's had a couple good long relief outings, but it's even with that good matchup, it's too risky for me.
Yeah, I think so. Dakota Hudson is at the Reds.
Only in a points league.
Anthony DeSclafani on the other side against the Cardinals.
No, I don't hate him as a 2-start option this week, but as for that matchup individually, no.
Eric Fetty at the Phillies.
No.
Spencer Howard against the Nationals.
No.
Tyler Glasnow and Gerrit Cole are both must-starts. Max Fried is a must-start. Trevor Williams at the Brewers.
No.
Shane Bieber is a must-start. Brad Keller at home against Cleveland.
Maybe. Yeah, I think I would. Even though he didn't go so well for him last time, I think I would.
Lucas Giolito is a must-start. And then on the other side is Rich Hill against the White Sox. Would you start him, Scott?
It's a little scary, but I think so.
Alrighty, that'll do it. He is Scott White. I am Frank Stanfill. Hopefully, we're both still here on the podcast by the next time you're listening to this. Who knows? Might get traded, right? Trade deadline is coming up on Monday.
Where are you going with that?
I don't know. But I expect more moves to happen. Hopefully, our teams are duking it out here. The Yankees and the Braves for Mike Clevenger. We'll see if one of them winds up with him. Or if he even gets traded at all. Let's see what happens. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today on our YouTube channel. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Apartments.com has helped millions of renters find their perfect places. And the beauty is, they're all different. None of us are the same. So why should our homes be? Someone may want hardwood floors. Someone else may say carpet all the way. Questionable call, but hey, to each their own. Some may want a doorman. Others may say, I can open the door myself. But Apartments.com has all the right tools to help you find the place that's uniquely perfect for you. Sort through and filter listings by amenities. And make sure you never miss out with their instant alert option. With more than 1 million available units for rent, you're sure to find the place that's right for you. So whether you're looking for a place with a basement, a yard, a pool, or everything in between, Apartments.com has got you covered. Visit Apartments.com, the place to find a place.